and welcome to the Pocket Sprocket Podcast, where we try to help Brock and Aaron simplify the good life. My name is Glenn Kubisch. I am not a medical doctor.
And my name is Darren Markland, and I am.
Get this, we're podcasting 680 miles or about 1,200 kilometers, or, so Aaron can really picture this, we are the length of 30,000 curling rinks lined up one after another northeast of the People's Republic of Portland, which, as we all know, is nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We up here are big fans of the show down there that brings us somewhat irreverent conversation on the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
So thanks, Brock and Aaron, for covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today, building a cycling community in the Great Bike North, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Let's get right to it. Darren Markland, my friend, Dr. Darren Markland, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a Burnside India Pale Ale.
And?
And it's very good.
How'd you describe it?
Well, thanks to the cycling community, I would call this not too hoppy. Though I find it pretty bitter.
I've got a Alley Cat Amber Brown Ale. Alley Cat being a local microbrewery here in Edmonton. And I think named after the brewmasters or the owner's two daughters, Allison and Catherine, Alley Cat.
Yeah, yeah. I actually know the new brewmaster. His name's Gunter Tregzer, and he's an interesting man. He rides a bike, too.
What does he bring to Alley Cat? It's nice. It's nice. I like it.
He brings kind of a Scottish-German accent. He was an archaeologist and met up with a Scottish lass and lived 20 years in Belfast. It's an accent you really have to hear to appreciate.
Give us a try.
You don't know. No, that's not even close. That's horrible.
Hey, we're up in Edmonton today. Edmonton, Canada. Snow melting Edmonton, Canada. But we're doing this for our friends down in Portland. Have you ever been to Portland?
I haven't. I've been to Seattle. I probably shouldn't say that. It's not the same place, but I'm a Portland wannabe.
Been to Portland three times. Once, two times quickly for business. One time on a vacation with my wife. It's about the B's, the four B's: beer, bikes, books, Powell's bookstore, I think, and beans, coffee, all things close to your...
Kind of sounds like utopia.
To your heart. I was down for a film by bike festival last year and met Brock. Brock was a judge on the panel, and then Aaron came down after one screening, and we hung out outside on... am I going to get this right? Clinton Street, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
One off of Division. Do I have my geography right, guys? Hope so. And it was a great trip. Rented a Brompton at one point, and we had, Sheila and I had a couple hours to kill, and we cycled across the bridges. I don't know, there's about, 11, 15 bridges. I don't know. They've got a new bridge coming called the Tillicum Crossing that I think will... be car prohibited. So it'll be public transit, bikes, pedestrians, emergency vehicles. Can you imagine a bridge like that here?
No, I can't. But I hope to one day see something like that.
The great thing about the Pocket, or about the Sprocket podcast, is that it does keep you up to date on what's happening in Portland. I know of no other way. And so Brock and Aaron do a great job bringing that city to life, and they sometimes talk. It sometimes gets to be really inside pool. They're talking about specific streets, you know, Southeast Division and that, but the Pearl District, things I don't really know,
right.
But kind of grows in my imagination and makes me want to go back. It's a beautiful city.
It's fantastic. I mean, the one thing that I should predicate this on is I actually have a piece of Portland inside of my garage. I own a Metrofeets cargo bike. And just looking at the natural history of that product and how much I enjoy using it up here in Edmonton, it's a little piece of Portland that zips along the streets of Edmonton.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Edmonton, because people may be wondering where the heck is Edmonton? We're the capital city, province of Alberta. Our weather is sort of like maybe a little bit of Minneapolis, a little bit of Chicago.
Yeah.
We've got snow on the ground. How many months a year?
Between 6 and 7, I'd say.
So,
but we can have bare ground in the middle of December, too. So it's a very heterogeneous environment for riding a bike in.
you don't live in an igloo?
No. I have an igloo in my backyard. My children made it last year when we actually put a bunch of snow. It's actually a Quincy, which is another Canadian thing. But we like snow. The important thing I think about living this far north is to make sure that you, if you choose to live this far north, you should embrace it. And so I've, from the very beginning, we were talking about, you know, our studio engineer here is having a child, and part of growing up in Edmonton is raising children. And from a very young age, I wanted my kids to think that winter was normal.
How old are your kids now?
I should know this. 13 and 11. Liam just had his birthday over the weekend.
Happy birthday, Liam.
Yeah, he got a bike for his birthday.
We rode with Liam on the clothing drive.
Yes, you did.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and so I think one of the philosophies that, you know, I've taken from riding my bike is one that I've applied to parenthood, is that embrace the winter. It's a great thing to do if you truly enjoy it. And make sure that you you do things which include being outside.
How would you characterize the how well that message resonates with Edmontonians?
Well, you know,
honestly,
I would say that we've come a long way in the last 5 years. But for the longest time, we spent a lot of time thinking that we could beat winter. And we put a lot of energy into turning the city into a place that is insulated against the natural reality of living at 54 degrees north latitude. And that takes a lot of energy, both physical and emotional, to deal with. I think right now we're starting to truly realize that, yes, we are a winter city, and being outside is not the worst thing in the world. I think we initially felt that if we gave this up, we were being defeated by it. But now I think it's the realization that winter is natural, and being part of it is important, too.
I remember in a previous life, I worked in the media, and I remember covering a story, and it was a serious pitch that there was going to be a new golf course built in South Edmonton that would be domed so that people could play year-round, which maybe was the height of absurdity, and maybe we've retreated, haven't heard that lately, so maybe it makes your point that maybe we are coming around to understanding that if we want to be happy, we have 6 months of snow and ice on the road to get through.
I think it's very true. And if you pull the focus back to, I think, a bigger issue, is the concept of where bicycling fits in with urban planning and what makes people fundamentally happy. I mean, people come to Edmonton this far north to get a job.
Right.
It's the economic reality. They stick around when they have family here. But what really keeps people in a city is culture and vibrancy. And for the longest time, we've been so spread out and disconnected that I think that hasn't been an Edmonton thing. I think we're now starting to miss that. And, you know, the heart wants what the heart wants. It wants community. And is a very good example of what you and I have been involved in. People out there want to get closer together, be it spatially or through friendships and associations. And that's where we're seeing a lot of bicycle commuters come together. And I think we're seeing new onus on designing and reforming the city so that it's tighter, closer, and more connected. And cycling has a huge part to do with that. It's almost an indicator species of a community that's working well and of an urban system that's connected.
So is your perspective as a medical doctor, a citizen, a community activist? Let's talk about you as medical doctor. What are you seeing that supports the suggestion that more of us should be on our bikes more of the time?
Well, I can tell you what motivates me to ride my bike when it's minus 40 and the snow is falling, and that is the fear of living a sedentary lifestyle. My job as an intensive care physician is looking after people who've made 20 to 30 years of bad choices. And it's not their fault. They make these choices because we as a species have been engineered to do the least amount of work for mm-hmm. the most gain. And so we complain about hardships. We complain when we're a little cold or if we have to walk too far. And that's become a political thing. And as a result, roads get built, covered walkways get made, and people become more and more accustomed to doing nothing. That over the last 50 years is killing us.
So nothing plus nothing plus nothing adds up to a lot of trouble.
And it correlates very well with national health statistics. If you look at obesity rates and diabetes, I mean, it's very well connected. 50 years ago, this was unheard of, and now it's a big thing. So why did I start doing well? Personally, I wanted to be fit, and I thought driving to a gym after a long day at work was a silly idea.
You have a nice phrase that you learned when you were a med student that you were addicted to feeling good.
Yeah.
On a bicycle. I want to make that into a t-shirt. Addicted to feeling good. I like that.
My wife says if I get another t-shirt, I have to get rid of a bike, so you'll have to do that.
All t-shirt makers listening to us, addicted to feeling good. Is the message getting through?
You know, I think it is. But like everything, change takes time. This is a generational thing. Right. But it doesn't mean that we can't set good examples. My patients have seen me on the news. Several of them have actually stopped smoking and started to do some form of exercise because they actually see me, you know, cashing the checks that I write.
Right.
I think that's very important.
We should explain that when the Edmonton media needs a crazy
winter cyclist
who's also a physician, your phone rings.
Apparently, I do add some credibility to the calling, but not by much.
So no car for you or low car? Or
No car. None.
So when you're called to the hospital in an emergency?
I have to be able to get to the hospital within a half an hour.
Okay.
And so like everything, when people start commuting, it's not just about buying a bike. It's a series of decisions that gets you there. And so for me, it's always been, you know, when we were residents, we rented a house that was close to the university. When we could finally afford to buy one, it was close to the hospital that I work at. That's part of it, so that, you know, eventually I wouldn't have to have a car.
There must have been a feeling, though, that when you graduated to the ability to buy a car, that you'd leave those childhood ways behind. I remember, riding a bike was okay in junior high. It was great last day of school in grade 9, but first day of school in grade 10, people started arriving in cars and the bikes were left behind. So what made you stick with the bike even though you could afford a car?
Well, I had to make that t-shirt, so I had to live the phrase, addicted to feeling good. But it was very clear that exercise... You know, people around you know you better than you know yourself. And so the people that I work with at a hospital would comment. I mean, there were days when I wasn't riding every day.
Right.
And they could tell the difference in how I was. And they could predict the days that I hadn't ridden into work just based on my mood and my concentration and how together I was.
Were you as good a doctor on those days?
Not even close.
Really?
You know, we spend a lot of time separating the mind from the body, and it's one of the problems with the medical system. You see that with mental health. You see that with physical health. But they're really connected, and so we were designed to move.
Well, that's a Western scientific project, though, is to divide, right?
Makes it easier to subspecialize and make more money.
Right.
But holistic approaches to health have a lot of benefits.
So how many bikes do you have?
Oh, goodness. I knew we were coming there. Before or after I got rid of my car, because it was a space issue.
After. How many do you have now?
12. I think I have 12 bicycles.
Okay. You think 12. Could be 13, could be 10.
There's always a project in the shed.
And what are you riding now?
Today I wanted to have a little adventure because I don't have to work till this evening. So I grabbed my fat bike. It's built around a 14-speed internal hub with fenders and a belt drive, and I decided to do some single track and jump in some puddles and take the long way here.
It's about 55 degrees today?
8 degrees Celsius, yeah. Is that the same?
40. Need some help here.
Help. 9/5 plus 32.
We're converting now. That's right.
It's warm. It's above freezing. The sun is shining.
You seeing other bikes out there today?
Tons of them. Yeah, there's a lot of bikes down in the River Valley.
It was something, one thing I know, I remember being in Portland was the first time I was on a bike there on that day that I rented the Brompton. I was so happy to see other cyclists. 46.4.
46.4 degrees.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian. it took a while for me to figure out that I didn't have to say hi to every cyclist. Like you do here, it's a gesture of solidarity, that we're in it together, that we're riding our bikes through Carville. But in Portland, you that makes you feel like a bumpkin pretty quick, you know? So.
Well, and that's a lovely place. That's taking cycling from being a cyclist to being somebody, a person who rides a bike. And that's a huge semantic shift.
Because is that a term that we should adopt? Is cyclist the wrong term?
I think there's a lot of literature out there that cyclist is a polarizing term. Mm-hmm. I think that was the generation before that got us where we are now, and I thank them for it. But it's time to move on. We talked about separation of mind and body. It's time to stop separating cyclists from people who drive vehicles. We all want to get where we're going, and getting there safely and efficiently is beneficial to everyone.
Okay, I'm going to pick up that theme in a bit, but I just want to go back to the bikes for a sec. 12 bikes. And you're riding the fat bike today. You've got a bamboo.
I do have a bamboo bike.
You made the bamboo bike.
I built the bamboo bike as a project. I was in a medical conference in San Francisco, and I walked past the bamboo bike studio, and I walked in there and talked to Piper, I think it was, and she showed me how she had been building bikes out of bamboo, and I was fascinated by it because I've always wanted to build a bike, right? It's this beautiful thing, two triangles, two circles, simplest thing around, but so many little nuances to getting it right. And the one thing I didn't want to have to figure out at the same time was how to weld, because I knew I would set my garage on fire.
So, and then you'd lose the coffee roaster.
And then lose the and 11 out of 12 bikes.
Right.
So bamboo interests me.
You got to go to Portland, Matt.
I need to go to Portland just to have a good cup of coffee outside of my own house. I went there, and you know, when someone's passionate about what they do, it's very clear. And Piper had been doing this for years. She'd built bikes out of bamboo. Originally started as this idea of, you know, building cheap bikes for Africa, and then realized what an incredible substance bamboo is. It's nature's carbon fiber. It's got great ride quality. And so figured out how to join these pieces with balsa wood and carbon fiber tape and epoxy. And so I couldn't actually take in the session about how to build it, but I chatted with her, and I figured I could figure this out.
So you bought a kit, or you just got the idea?
I got the idea.
Okay.
And then I sourced bamboo from her, and then everything else locally, and downloaded an AutoCAD program and figured out geometries and just started building.
That's what the internet is for.
That is that.
Not blowing each other up.
Exactly. It's learning how to build a bike. And my first model was a catastrophic failure. I broke the frame within about a week or two, but I learned from it. And then I built another one.
Right.
And I still ride that thing. It's my favorite bike of all of them.
It's a fixie?
Single speed. Yeah, it's a fixie. It's all bamboo and leather. And it rides better than it looks, and it looks pretty damn fine.
Conversation starter.
It's a good way to talk to people. Everybody looks at it. They look for the label, and there is none because
right.
It's mine.
That's what I love about – one of the things that I really love about cycling is how social the machine is, or forces you or accepts you as being a social creature. We stop and talk to people. We talk at red lights. We talk as we're moving along. High five. I saw Greg spin this morning on the way to work talking to each other, you know, for 15 seconds. But that's a 15-second encounter on 102nd Avenue that I never would have gotten in a car.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember very clearly we met up one day coming in the River Valley.
Right.
You'd been shopping. You had quite a haul, so you're moving pretty slow. And we
No, I think I just told you. I was moving kind of slow.
We caught up and we chatted. And one of the things we actually talked about was the social aspect of cycling and how the sheer act of putting up just a transparent piece of glass, your exact comment, all of a sudden changes the rules of social engagement, almost on a fundamental biological level. And I was saying that, you know, there's actually neuroscientific research out there that documents this.
If you've got a windshield, screen in front of you,
different neurons fire. You know, even though it's translucent, we know there's separation. And when we know there's separation, we act differently.
Mm.
And so cars do that. If you've ever driven in a third world country, you know very clearly that cars are more like bikes because everyone has their windows down. The thing that terrifies me are windows up and the addition of a little tint, and all of a sudden you develop a social psychopathy. It's very clear if I can't see you and you can't see me and you've got 5,000 pounds of mass on me, you can use your inertia in any way you want to.
Right.
Cycling breaks down barriers because we all become humans and we all become vulnerable, but we also have the opportunity to become friends.
I was at the red light this morning on 102nd and 101st, heart of our downtown, and I was bus in front of me, bus stop behind me, and I looked up and saw three magpies, I think, three birds circling atop one of the office towers, and the sunlight hit the under part of their wings as they were wheeling. And I just thought, wow, like what a great moment. What a beautiful piece of poetry that I never would have had if I tipped my neck back in the car and looked at the roof of the car frame. It was gorgeous. It was the best part of my day.
Well, and that's exactly it. When you go back to the reasons why you ride a bike, it's every day is a little bit of an adventure. When you get to work, sometimes the hardest part of your day is behind you. Who wouldn't want to do that every single day?
You said earlier that, it's an old Greek saying. I don't know the Greek, but like to like. We tend to, or we want to search each other out. We want to find each other. And this time 2 years ago, you and I didn't know each other. But we found each other on Twitter, along with another, 15, 20 winter cyclists who organized under the hashtag YegBike. Mm-hmm. YEG being the three-letter call letters for our airport, YEG, YegBike. We've grown since then. What's a YegBike about from your point of view?
I think YegBike is about the people who are in it. And even though you're interviewing me, I would say that you're being quite modest because it was a loose association of people who rode in the winter, but I think you yourself directed us to higher means. Specifically, we are a group of people who want to get rid of the moniker of people who complain and people who are anti, insert whatever word you want after that. Instead, we tried to turn ourselves, because I think we were socially minded, to better things. And so YegBike has actually been a social force. We've contributed to several charities. We have a strong voice in local government. We've contributed local politicians from our group. And it's a wonderful group of people when you look, A, at the diversity and also the selflessness of the people who are part of it. And I have no idea if that's a local phenomenon, but I can honestly say that I haven't come across anyone in the group that I dislike. In fact, I am remarkably proud to be part of a group like that.
It's my favorite events are the whenever we can on Friday mornings, we steal a page out of Portland's book. And
best page out of Portland's book.
We have coffee outside.
Amongst some very nice pages.
True enough. But we meet in a different perk or park, and we brew our own coffee, and or we bring it in thermoses, and we have a great cup of coffee before the start of the day. It's been we got through this winter, didn't we?
Yeah, we have had coffee in some pretty adverse circumstances. I remember the very first time we organized it was the biggest snowstorm that Edmonton's had in the winter, and we still had people show up.
I think I got shingles after that.
It was pretty harsh. We've had coffee at minus 20. We've had coffee. Sorry, what's minus 20? And meets at minus 40.
Minus 20. Come on, we need a conversion producer. But I think it's probably the same at about that point.
Minus 40 at meets.
I think minus 20, it's around 3 degrees, probably,
yeah,
Fahrenheit.
It's cold. But we've had coffee when it's above zero as well. Minus 4.
Minus 4, okay.
Yeah. And again, it's a great thing. I mean, we got it out of Portland's book because I think everybody likes coffee. But again, there's a fundamental need for people to connect, and this was a way to do it, and it was interesting. I think we even had some people from Calgary who joined us in the last.
The commit to commute.
Yeah.
Tandem.
Yeah.
Pair of it. First-time commuters.
They're doing pretty good for first time.
Professional women who are doing that and chronicling it at Commit to Commute on Twitter.
Well, that's the other thing that's quite interesting about our group is I think we have about a 50-50 split of women and men in it. So it's not a gender-specific thing. People who want to get to where they want to get to are the same.
I remember a generation ago when you know, voices cycling in the wilderness would try to convince local politicians of the merits of cycling. It was always, the argument always went down a health line. Mm-hmm. That it was good for you, that we had to battle heart disease or obesity, that we had to keep people moving, that it was good to exercise, it was good to be outside, or it was a fun argument, some of the things that we've already talked about. I've noticed that of late, maybe that the key of that argument has changed, and I just want to get your thoughts on that, because I'm hearing more and more that sort of argument, which comes with a little bit of judginess to it, that I'm telling you that you could be happier or you could be healthier if you only got on a bicycle. I'm hearing less of that, and I'm hearing more of, we choose to cycle because it's the best way to get from A to B. So it's a pure transportation sort of argument. Where do you think that's coming from, or do you agree?
Well, I agree. I think...
is it a good thing?
I think we're getting smarter. I think we know that... I think everybody knows that cycling is healthy. People who drive know it's healthy. There's been a lot of research into what are the barriers between motorists and cyclists. And it's interesting. There is a common thread that people feel that cyclists are lording things over them. And be it, you're just so bloody happy when you get off the bike and
that's
you're
true.
Primed with endorphins and want to hug everybody.
You show up at work, you're smiling, and people use that against you.
But that doesn't work very well when you're in council chambers.
Right.
And so being smart about what your goals are, it's not about saying that I'm better than you because I don't drive a car, I've got a smaller carbon footprint, I'm healthier, I don't have to go to the gym. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for common ends. And common ends is exactly as you say it, the most efficient way to get where you're going in a way that makes you feel good. And so if you want to drive, so be it. That's your prerogative. You have to pay the right price to do it, because getting someplace takes money. And so I think if we look at the appropriate costs and lobby for it appropriately, we know that there's a way of achieving that that doesn't separate us, that doesn't make us adversarial.
What's next for the Yegg Bike crew, or what do you want to see happen next? I guess we should tell those listening to us that there was a historic decision made by our city council recently. We're going to get two protected stretches of bike lane in Edmonton down two major corridors. Happy about that?
Oh, yeah. No, ecstatic. It's legitimate infrastructure, probably some of the first legitimate infrastructure that Edmonton's had.
In this generation, no,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. What's next for the group that wants to keep it fun? Where do we take our little movement?
Well, you know, I think we're a small grassroots group, and I think it's important to maintain our focus that way. I think Molly McDougall has got us scheduled for another charity drive, which is a good thing to do. From other directions, I think we may be building a snowplow together one day.
Oh, yeah, the snowplow.
I've had some images in my head of several fat bikes pulling a very large snowplow.
Can you weld?
I'm going to learn.
Okay.
But we have people who know how to weld in the group, and there's a lot of interest in something.
That is amazing about, and I think this is something that that Brock was touching on a podcast or two ago when he said that the cycling community is amazing because there's nobody in it who doesn't want to share a gift, a talent, a propensity that they have. It's all, yes, how can I help? How can I share what I can do to make things better? We seem to crave that, even though we live in like a late technological time.
But it's the simplest thing in the world to get on, you know, a bike and ride.
Okay, so we're going to make a snowplow.
We're going to make a snowplow that six people can pull, and that we can clear the trails independent of the city.
city did a better job this year. The trails, or no?
I think the city's been great. I think for the first time, they've been very proactive. I think they want to make this work. I think there's a huge gap to make up.
Right.
But we can't ask for a million things without, you know, putting some effort into it ourselves. And it's a great story. Tom Babin, as you know, the author of Frostbike, Calgarian. I think he works for the Herald, but
he
rode
does.
A bike on the history of cycling in Canada. And he tells a great story about how the city of Calgary started to actually plow their trails. And it was a local movement. Someone decided to plow them themselves, a local citizen. And one day when they stopped doing it, the people who'd used those trails were incensed and demanded that the city continue to do it. City had no idea that the trails were being cleared, looked into it and realized that there was a demand for that kind of thing. Yegbike, I think, can help that by exactly doing the same things, increasing the clearance, you know, trying to be a little more like Copenhagen, maybe get our trails cleared within 6 hours of a snowfall.
Right, instead of maybe a couple days now?
Well, if you want
a major snowfall?
If you want people to truly use this as a modality, it has to be there all the time. And so people shouldn't have to own 12 bikes to be able to get to work. They should have to own one. And that bike should get them there through summer, winter, fall, and spring.
Right.
That's commitment from the city. That's an urban commitment that needs to be done. If you want to get this as mass appeal.
What are you looking for that will be some signs of some budding success? When will you know that we're growing, that it's working, that more people have made that decision?
When riding in the winter is no longer a news item.
Right.
You know, when the Edmonton Sun no longer publishes comments that people who ride bikes are a threat to humanity.
Well, we are a threat to humanity as it's currently configured.
Yes.
They've got that.
When it's normal. And that, going back to the beginning of the interview, is what I'm teaching my children, that to be outside in the snow when it's cold and doing things is normal in Edmonton.
Wouldn't it be nice to see, I mean, I cycle by two, depending on my route, two or three elementary, junior, high schools, and they're down to like one or two bike racks and not the 20 that we had growing up.
Aiden,
that'll be my sign of success, is that when I see a few more kids riding their bikes like only kids do.
You know, and again, my kids have ridden.
Sure.
Since the age of four, they've ridden through winter. And so they're the only bikes in the bike racks in the middle of winter.
Right.
And the SUV mums think we're a little crazy, but, you know, they're actually starting to think it's not a bad idea. And for the first time, the other day I looked out my window, and in the middle of February, there was a kid on a little tiny fat bike with his dad going for a ride.
Beautiful.
That was a moment where I thought, you know, the human race has a chance.
Fantastic. Good time to wrap up this inaugural edition of the Pocket Sprocket Podcast. Brock Aaron, we love the work that you do. It's full of joy. It's full of love of your... of your town that we hope to visit again soon. But until we do, we'll make do with this beautiful Burnside Brewing Company India Pale Ale. Thanks for the opportunity, Doc. Nice to have you here.
Always a pleasure, Glenn.
On Twitter, you are at Dr. Dagley, DrDagly.
Correct.
And on Twitter, I am KUB64, at Kube64. Brock Aaron, thanks a lot. Signing off from the Great Bike North.
We'll see you in person soon.
Brush your teeth.
Hey there, Glenn. How's it going?
Brock, how are you?
I'm good. Oh, hey, we've got... Oh, goodness, look at this. He's got beer in his hand.
What?
Hey, hold it up again.
Valley Cat Main Squeeze Grapefruit Breakfast Beer, says my wife.
That's beautiful.
It's good for your diabetes.
That's good to hear the famous laugh of Aaron. That's fantastic.
You know, I realize since you're there, we go.
My heroes.
Thanks.
I'm not sure how I feel about that. I'm conflicted. Hey, just want to say first off, thank you so much for doing the recording with Darren. That was lovely.
Are you kidding me? Thanks for the opportunity.
That was so much fun. So tell me, where did you record that?
At my work.
Nice.
We have a studio. I work as a media and story director for a regional bank, as you know.
Oh, okay.
And, we have a little studio beneath my office, and so that's where we went.
There we go. Well, it came out perfectly. I think that was like, especially for the first time we've ever farmed out an interview, it was like better than I could have expected. So.
Oh, we had a blast. We were looking forward to it from the moment that you said it was a project, and we weren't going to let you guys go back on that word. you just might have been polite. I don't know. But, and then all of a sudden the recording shows up. So joke's on you guys.
That was lovely. Yeah, and who is your tech?
His name is Brian Haiti.
Oh, I thought you meant me.
Oh.
And there's your other tech. Oh. Hi, Sheila.
Hey, Sheila. Hello,
Sheila. Hello,
everybody. Sheila, you remember Brock and Aaron from outside the Clinton Street Theater at Film by Bike?
Of course.
As good to see both of you.
Fantastic.
Yes. Yeah.
Good to hear your voices. You know, Brian was his name. He's an ENG. He's a former news cameraman and is all things technical for us. So.
Okay, nice. Well, he did a fantastic job. So we right should on. Get him Thanks. To move down here and do a production for us. Maybe we can steal him from you. I'm just curious. You talked about all kinds of stuff, things that you do up there. Anything that you didn't mention that happened like in the past week or two that you're really excited about? There was a Twitter I saw.
Well, a couple, let's see, last couple of weeks, out of the blue, we had our coffee outside sponsored by a local bike store and a local coffee shop.
Beautiful.
They noticed, Revolution Cycle and Remedy Cafe got together during YAG Coffee Week, which was last week in Edmonton, and surprised us by coming out and serving for everyone who was there. We were in the mountains then, so didn't get to see it, but that was a blast.
That's awesome.
The other thing that's happened is kind of hard news worthy, not us specifically, but one of our main bridges is under construction. It's the 102nd Avenue Bridge. It's my main thoroughfare into downtown. And so without it, we've cyclists in the west end of Edmonton have had to detour. And so overnight, last night, four giant steel girders on the bridge mysteriously buckled.
Oh, shit.
So it's a huge mystery in Edmonton. And it's got car drivers like apoplectic because they can't.
They have no other way how to get to where they're going?
They didn't have a way across it for a few months now, but now the way under it is shut down, so they're going crazy, they're going nuts. So no big change for us on two wheels, but
long live bikes. Seriously, that's the only way to go.
Long live bikes, amen, brothers.
Wow, that's intense. So it reminds me of like in Boston with the Big Dig, like big old chunks of the ceiling falling out or something.
Yeah, this wasn't crumbling infrastructure as much as some. And I don't know whether like the bridge was like 100 years old when they decided rightly, I think, to redo it. But like in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, they were putting these giant girders on and they're just like spaghetti noodles now, you know. They should be straight and they look like S's. So, yeah.
Wow.
So I'll cycle by there for the first time tomorrow. So I'll take a look.
Okay. Nice. Well, I'm glad nobody was hurt. It sounds like it was just kind of a freak accident that happened when no one was nearby to get hurt by it.
It was a freak accident, but it's sort of like nobody even considers, or I shouldn't say nobody, but few people consider how if you're on two wheels, you're not as affected.
Yeah.
By that, it doesn't get into the imagination as much as it will soon, I hope.
Have you noticed an increase of people biking because of this?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, our modal share here is I think it's been frozen around I don't know, 3 or 4% for a long time. But something's happened over the last little bit. I think, you know, bicycle commuters here have got tired of kind of being alone. And they've got, in a way, tired of being the downers, you know, just like, I really respect everyone who can argue the bylaw arguments with the best of them, but that's not what we're about. Right. We have really smart people in the Edmonton bicycle community, but it's when we were in Portland, it just seemed like it was fun more than anything, you know. It was, and I know that there are issues there. I've been following your Clinton Street.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let us broadcast it far and wide.
We were there, but we just wanted to have more fun. And when you have more fun, you get more people. And when you get more people, you stop feeling alone. And when people stop feeling that they're alone, they're willing to join more. So I think we've started a little bit, and we're already seeing people we've who are friends now who we didn't know about 3-4 months ago. So yeah, I mean, we've got a way to go, but we're not alone.
It sounds like, I mean, I hear things happening on the Twitter feed often about, it seems like there is fun to be had. So I'm glad to hear that. Last question, maybe before we let you go and you can go to sleep because it's later there than it is here. Are you going to do your own podcast now?
Well, geez, you know what? I didn't consider that until you asked or you suggested it. Darren and I are having dinner together this Saturday night with our wives. So I'm sure that we caught into that.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
I'm sure by the end of the night, it'll be a yes, and then we'll get back to you for sure on Sunday.
Oh, great. All right.
I look forward to the Yegg Bike podcast.
Yeah, maybe it's the next step, and which makes you guys the grandfathers of the Yegg Bike podcast. So
then we'd be honored.
Yeah. And my mom would finally get off my case about having children.
Hey guys, thanks for being as real as you are. I mean, it's just great to hear voices and to get sentiment and to get you're the pulse for us about when it comes to Portland. And so we love the time that you put into it and the effort and the emotion and the intelligence that you put into it, because it really comes across and has certainly helped our community here. More than you'll know. So thank you for that.
Damn it, Glenn, you're going to make me cry twice.
Yeah, holy shit.
I cry when I listen to the episode.
Yeah,
we really appreciate it, man. It's great. And honestly, like as much as if you guys are getting something out of what we do, I'm getting something out of hearing about you guys too. Yeah, so it's lovely.
We couldn't have done it without your support. And I mean, just knowing that you're there listening, that there's people like you out there listening.
Awesome. And next time we got a kick when you did the Sheila, what was the name of the movie that we watched beginning to end?
Oh, what was the name of it?
Premium Rush.
Adrenaline Rush or something?
Yeah, Premium Rush with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah.
And then Adele was there, and then somebody came in and Aaron was talking about snacks or something
and
you made me watch right to the end until you threw my name in there knowing that I'd still be there. It was cemented.
That's hilarious. Well, thank you, Glenn. We're looking forward to this going out and everyone will hear it. So, yeah.
Let us know next time you're in town.
Absolutely. We off chance that we'll get there for Film by Bike if work works out.
But ooh,
if not, because it's over by VeloCult
this correct. That's going to be at the Hollywood Theater, which is gloriously beautiful.
And is that where you learned how to make underwear out of paper towels or whatever?
that was elsewhere.
Is that where the public washroom was around there?
No, that was actually somewhere entirely different. Although I'm sure the paper towels at the Hollywood Theater also make for good underpants if you're in a pinch. All right,
we'll let you guys know for sure. What's your timeline on the sharing the Northern Pod?
Oh, it's coming out next Monday.
Fantastic.
Yeah, or what, we'll get a little, Tuesday we'll get or something like here. That.
Listen, and we'll send you some pics.
Oh, awesome! Awesome. Love it.
That'd be great.
All right, have a good night, Glenn. Have a good night, Sheila.
Peace, guys.
See you soon.
Bye.
Adios.
Brush your teeth.
Brush your teeth.
That was fabulous.
So, maybe you enjoyed this little interview and you would like to share something about what's happening in your little pocket, wherever you happen to be. If you know somebody awesome that we will never get to your town to talk to, or it's going to take like 3 years or something, we'd love to hear their stories. Please get in touch and we'll talk about it. It's a big world out there. We're just looking forward to hearing about what's happening. And now, my commute home from the IPRC and the end credits.
Division Street. Right now I'm passing Beer Mongers, where we love to drink, and I'm also passing Apex, where we also love to drink, and Pine State Biscuits, where I refuse to eat because it's way too trendy. The plan is I'm going to read the credits here as I ride down the road. First of all, a right turn over to Clinton Street. So as to avoid the noisiest traffic. All right, now having passed Mason's Supply Building, I am going to proceed up Clinton Street on this borrowed bike Friday that I'm riding, and I'm going to read the credits. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call or text 503-847-9774. Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. We're also on Facebook. Thanks to Ryan J. Lynn for our theme music, Hurt Bird for our headline sounder, Marcus Norman for graphic design. Thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K., Shadowfoot, Katharina Mellengarden, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson, Cameron Lean, Richard Wazenski, Tim Mooney, Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, who did this week's episode, Matt Kelly, Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen-Miller, Todd Parker, Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez, Dan Gebhard. I lost my place here. Zoe Campagna, John Blood, Allison Wiley, Andy Brunner, Dave Nose, Lars V, Chris Smith, Christy Kaster, Caleb Jenkinson, J.P. Keeley, Matt B., Patrick R. Chain, and Gabriel Trainer. All right, this is Brock on Southeast Clinton Street signing off.
Irrelevant. Okay. And look, I've turned it into one word.
Are we ready? Irreverent, not irrelevant.
Irreverent.
Ready to go?
Yes.
Here we go.
There we go. Oh, yeah, it's doing the thing.
What?
Hello.
A production of Open Roads Broadcasting.